Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Good evening, and welcome to the Green Egg Radio Hour. I'm Ariel Monserrat.
And I'm Sylvie Salou.
Our special guest tonight is Taylor Elwood, author, blogger, founder of The Way of the Magician Mystery School, and editor of nonfiction books at the prestigious Emanion Press. This is what Taylor has to say about himself in his own words.
He says, I've always been fascinated by magic. When I was a kid, I eagerly devoured the Dragonlance books, and my favorite characters was always Rastlin. I was in awe of not only his magical powers, but also his tenacity and complexity as a character. When I was 16, I was introduced to magic when a fellow student sat down with me and told me about his experience on the astral plane and about magic. I asked him where I could learn more, and the next day he brought books in. I started reading, then doing the exercise, and with that, I was hooked.
I first started practicing an eclectic mix of neo-shamanism and elemental hermeticism, and gradually found my way to Golden Dawn ceremonial magic. I practiced that for a while before moving on to ceremonial magical practices that fell outside the usual practices most magicians know about. I focused on the ceremonial work of William Gray. and Franz Barden, as well as other writers, not as well known as Aleister Crowley, but infinitely more interesting than what the aforementioned Beast wrote. I eventually graduated into chaos magic, and from there started developing my own systems of magic, which I'm continuing to do to this day.
I have also studied and practiced Taoist, Tibetan, and Buddhist meditation and internal alchemy techniques. I was introduced to these techniques in the early 2000s, and I recognized that they filled a fundamental gap that was missing in Western magic, namely a rigorous system of internal work and meditation. I feel that internal work is an absolute must for any magician to fully realize his or her potential.
I am the managing nonfiction editor of Megalithica Books, an imprint of Emanion Press. I first started working with Emanion Press in 2004 when they published my first solo book, Pop Culture Magic. And I will leave it at that because I don't want to give away any questions that we're going to be asking.
Wow, I'm pretty impressed.
Well, you should be, and you're probably very busy. I mean, that's a lot of projects going on at once. So, Taylor, welcome to our show. And why don't you start out with telling us what your current definition of magic is?
First of all, thanks for having me on the show, and I am, as you mentioned, very busy, but it's always good to do these things and connect with people this way. Current definition of magic is that magic is a medium or a technology or power, however you want to look at it, that helps a person change his or her contract with the universe and change that agreement with the universe and consequently change his or her identity and the possibilities available to him or her.
Wow. Changing your contract with the universe. That's just fascinating.
Well, thank you. I've kind of moved away from more traditional definitions of magic because I think that they focus a lot more on doing. Aleister Crowley's definition, for example, is all about, the art and science of causing change to occur in conformity with will, basically doing something that imposing your will upon the universe. And I don't really quite agree with that. I think that it's more like we're in a symbiotic relationship with the universe, a symbiotic relationship with the world, et cetera, and that really what we're doing is we're changing our agreement, we're changing our understanding of our place in the world or in the universe, and consequently our access to given possibilities, and that magic is one of those ways that we do that, because we look at what our relationship is, and we fundamentally understand that it isn't something that is necessarily working for us the way that it is. So we say, all right, I want to change that, and I'm going to use magic to put myself into this new space, this new time, and then consequently that'll open the door to other possibilities for me, but it'll also change the embodiment of myself that I have in this world and how it's manifesting in the world.
Wow. Powerful stuff.
Yeah. So can you tell us more about how ontology and magic work together, as well as why you think identity is a key element of magic?
Well, I think that identity is a key element of magic because it's something that is essential to that contract with the universe. When I talk about identity, I'm not talking about ego or anything like that. I'm really talking about the sense of connection that we feel within ourselves to the world around us and to the universe. And also that sense of awareness that says, okay, this is who I am. And when we look at that sense of awareness, that identity, we're not just looking at identity in the sense of consciousness, so that I'm consciously aware of myself, for example, and we're not looking at it in terms of our names. We're not just comprised of a name, but we're also looking at it in terms of the connection we have with our body and its establishment of our identity. We're looking at it in relationship to culture and our identity within the culture that we live in. We're looking at it in relationship to family and ancestry, finances, and a bunch of other mediums out there, all of which help to mediate our existence in this world. And so when I'm looking at ontology is basically the study of the essence of being, or the study of identity. And the reason I've found this to be so central to my own magical work is because when you look at most Western magic, it's actually something that is either ignored for the most part, or you have books that'll say, oh, well, kill your identity, get rid of it. And they're really borrowing that from Eastern mysticism, and I don't know that they're necessarily taking an accurate approach to what Eastern mysticism is talking about, because there's vast cultural differences between Western and Eastern cultures. But so I've kind of looked at it and I've said, well, here's this study of identity, this study of embodiment, and in Western culture we also have this kind of phobia around the body, for example, which we've inherited from Christianity. You know, the body is sinful, the body is dirty. Well, I think the only way we can really move past that kind of cultural heritage is to actually embrace it as a form of identity, and really to examine our identity in relationship to the world that we live in, as opposed to looking towards some afterlife, some promised time when we no longer have a body and supposedly we're up on some cloud somewhere strumming a lyre and singing praises to a deity. And that's not my idea of heaven anyway. And I would much rather manifest heaven on earth right now in this earth by being connected to my body, being connected to this world, and really examining my relationship and examining examining how I'm choosing to interact not only with other people but with animals and plants and the environment and everything else. And so that's where this approach to an ontological approach comes in, because it moves outside of the focus on just the self and actually really examines the relationship at large that we have with the world around us.
Mm-hmm. That strikes me as something that's extremely important. I mean, kind of the heart of paganism is our relationship with the world around us. And most of us are animists, and, you know.
Well, and I see that as a good example of in fact that kind of that recognition that's kind of been going on for a while, that you know we really are part of something much larger. We're not just focused on ourselves, and you know, with monotheistic religions, you tend to see the main focus tends to be on getting to the afterlife, and when you have that kind of focus, you're not concerned about taking care of the world around you, because as far as you're concerned, the world around you is temporary, whereas the afterlife is permanent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a really important distinction that you don't hear being made very often. But, that sounds really dead right on to me. Taylor, what is the way of the Magician Mystery School, and what does it mean to create an embodied state of causality?
The way of the Magician Mystery School is actually something I've just started putting together here. Really, over the course of the last year, I put together the first correspondence course, and then I've just started offering the first weekend intensive, which is the Space-Time Magic Weekend Intensive. And it's really it's three things. It's based off of my background in Western magic and the various systems that I've explored and studied there, as well as the Eastern mystical systems that I've explored, Buddhist meditation and Taoist meditation mixed in with some Tibetan shamanism. And on the Western end, some chaos magic, some Franz Barden, and some of William Gray's work, and mixed in with some other ceremonial magic and elemental hermetic things. But it's also, the third element is really an integration of contemporary disciplines and studies that wouldn't be considered occult or pagan per se, but nonetheless are very relevant to our world. And what I'm really referring to by that, for example, is examining, for example, neuroscience as a discipline or rhetoric as a discipline, and actually taking the practices in there and seeing how we can apply a magical approach to those practices and then integrate those into our actual work, our spiritual work. And so the way the Magician Mystery School is really aimed at exploring all three of those schools of thought, the Eastern and Western approaches to magic, and then the non-occult disciplines that nonetheless have some very relevant information, as well as, of course, including my own spin on magic from my work, such as Space-Time Magic, Inner Alchemy, and Pop Culture Magic. And when I talk about embodying an embodied state of causality, what I'm really talking about is that when you're doing this work, at a certain point, you should be able to move away from doing into being. And a state of being is one where you are so in touch with the causality around you, with space-time and all the possibilities and stuff, that you don't necessarily need to do any overt forms of magic so much as you actually directly connect into those space-time possibilities and then bring them into this reality by embodying them into your body, and from there manifesting them outward into the world around you. And that's kind of where a lot of my own work has gone, so I'm looking to teach that to other people.
All right. And so it sounds like that's also how your mystery school differs from some of the other mystery schools, it sounds like.
I would suspect so, you know.
Yeah.
Other people might want to speak on that a bit, but I think that that's the case.
Okay.
So, in both Inner Alchemy and Magical Identity, you talk about working with neurotransmitter entities. Can you tell us more about them and your other work with the body?
Sure. Well, and this actually goes right back in hand with the what I was talking about a few moments earlier about taking a discipline such as neuroscience and really taking the information from it, and then applying a magical approach to it. You know, when I wrote Inner Alchemy, right before I wrote it, one of the things a couple of years before I started writing, one of the things I started doing is I asked myself what it would be like to actually work with the body as a magical universe. And I thought that it would be interesting to actually explore the microbial life and the neurotransmitters and everything else as spiritual entities in their own right. And so, and I've detailed a lot of that and a lot of that kind of work in both books. But what it really involved was learning to go inward into my body and actually connect with the neurotransmitters and treat them as spiritual entities that could be interacted with, not just as hormones and chemicals that alter the mood of that, you know, help to alter our body's biochemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that when I did this, that I could actually connect with the neurotransmitters as spiritual entities and work with them, and that it could be used to help induce you know, states of healing and even in states of altered consciousness by working with them directly. And not only that, but then I started exploring, like, for example, the relationship that I might have with the bacteria in my stomach. We actually have good bacteria in our stomach, and that it helps with the digestion that we do. And so I thought it would be neat to explore working with that bacteria, again, as a spiritual entity. And so I actually connected with that bacteria and started, learning about it and learning to interact with it. And so that's kind of what that work is really about. It's learning to work with our body and to understand that there is life inside of our body. And when we learn to work with it on a conscious level, we can actually improve the relationship we have with our body as a result.
Yes. Are you at all familiar with Arnold Mandel's work with the body?
I'm not, but it's kind of funny because the other day it was recommended that I check out one of his books, and so I looked on Amazon and I saw a bunch of things and I thought, wow,
yeah,
I'm going to add that to my wish list because that's stuff that looks like I need to read for later on for research for my next book, for one of my next books.
Yeah. He's a Jungian psychotherapist who has studied shamanism. He may even be a shaman, I'm not sure. But anyway, he uses a lot of shamanistic techniques. And, you know, the whole idea of putting your hand on your throat, for example, and listening to what it has to say is so powerful. I did 5 years of work with that, not with him, but with someone who had studied him. And it's just so powerful, and it really is life-changing. That's when my whole life changed. So I think you're onto something here that's really important. And then the other comment I had was, if you're at all familiar with Clive Baxter's work, he, back in 1966, I think it was, proved that plants were sentient, basically. That's how I'm going to put it. I don't know if he did, but... with a lie detector test, this is kind of...
I am familiar with that. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, the plants screaming.
And proved that they had emotions as well and everything. It was just really fascinating.
Well, what most people don't know, he wrote a later book, I can't remember, maybe 20 years ago or something, and he did the same thing with yogurt, various kinds of food, but with yogurt, live-cultured yogurt, and he found that bacteria also communicate. And his final conclusion was, all of creation is in constant communication. But humans, because we don't use anything telepathic, most of us, and most people don't meditate, we don't hear it. We're cut off.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
Really.
I think our species is one of the most self-involved species around.
and self-destructive, too, I would also add.
I'd agree with that, Joe. That's one of the reasons I think that that's really one of the reasons that my own work has occurred, because it's really been an inquiry into how I could change my own relationship with the world around me and with my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, when I was 18, I was diagnosed as having bipolar 2 disorder, and also possibly being a possible multiple personality, although that had more to do with the fact that I think the psychiatrist was a Christian and didn't really care for the fact that I was practicing magic.
Yeah, you're right.
We're all seen as having multiple personality disorder, but my family had always had a history of having depression, and so I determined, and I definitely had depression for a long time at that point in my life. I'd been, I knew that myself, so I wasn't really too surprised by it, but I knew I didn't want to spend the rest of my life taking medication, and that's what really informed my work into the body, because I realized that if I wanted to do something about it, I needed to actually change the relationship I had and to learn how to work with my body. And so that's really what caused that to occur. And I think that a lot of times, we're kind of sold on medication and all these other things without really taking the time to explore what the relationship with our body could be, or what kind of natural solutions might be there. And so that's kind of the motivation for a lot of the work that I'm continuing to do to this day.
Taylor, do you feel that you've been that basically you've healed yourself from bipolar and depression?
Oh yeah, yeah. I haven't had any issues. I haven't had any issues for years with that.
You certainly don't sound like a bipolar person. I mean, I was a psychotherapist for 15 years, and you're not sounding manic or depressive to me. You sound alive.
Well, no, and I don't feel it. I mean, occasionally I have what I would consider to be a, normal bit of depression sometimes. Like, you hear some sad news or whatever, and of course, but I don't feel like it's a chemical soup. It was interesting because back when I felt it, when I was depressed, it felt like my head was on fire.
Wow.
And I felt like I couldn't really, really think straight. And now I can say that, it doesn't feel that way. It hasn't felt that way in years, and it's because of the work with the neurotransmitters and just working with my body in general. And I think that there are valid techniques for doing that people can explore. Naturally, they should do it carefully, but there's no reason that we should have to be at the mercy of our physiology if we're willing to explore that relationship and learn how to develop a more harmonious connection with ourselves and the universe. And it's interesting because the cells in our body are also communicating, much like you mentioned the bacteria and in the yoga culture, they're communicating, with each other all the time. So there's no reason that we can't communicate with them. It's just that we've been arrogant enough not to believe it and to think that the only thing that can communicate is something that has a mouth and can say words.
Well, and we're told that this stuff is hooey, and it's superstition, and you're an idiot if you fool around with it. And, of course, the exact opposite is what I found, that there's a lot of geniuses that are working magic,
Well, I want to go back to the neurotransmitter thing for a minute. Does this have to do with recognizing vibrations and different wavelengths and frequencies and things like that? Or learning to recognize those?
Well, I've worked with neurotransmitter entities is that I've actually I have a meditation where I go into my body and I vibrate the name of the neurotransmitter while I'm doing this meditation to kind of build up the connection between myself and the neurotransmitter. But then I ask for it to appear before me in whatever shape or form that'll help me recognize it. And then afterwards, when it appears, I've asked it to describe what it does and how it works, and asked it for a symbol. So it's actually fairly similar to classic evocation when you're doing a full summoning. With that said, I do think that there's something to be said for exploring energy and sound and vibration and frequencies in terms of communication, and I think you do see that with certainly with the cells. There was a journal I read a while back where scientists were exploring with what they called biophotonic energy in cells, and it's basically energy that's emitted by the DNA within the cells. And when you change the DNA, it changes the frequency of energy. And what they were exploring was whether that was whether there was a correlation between that and cancer. And at the time, they hadn't come to any conclusions, but it was a pretty interesting article.
Yeah, really. And I've heard of people actually communicating with their cancer, you know, when they come down with that. Now, when you say that you, I can't remember exactly how you put it, but you mentioned tuning your vibration into the particular neurotransmitter. How do you do that? Do you do that through chanting or something else?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm basically calling the name of the neurotransmitter. So, like, you know, serotonin, for example. But I would do it with a serotonin, like that.
Okay.
And, you know, basically connecting with that entity through that the vibration of that name. And you know, I'll be doing that, kind of focusing on that and going inward with my consciousness to you know, into my body. And then at a certain point, I'll just stop and say, you know, I ask you to appear before me in whatever shape is most appropriate for me to connect with you. And you know, you do that initially when you're actually connecting with the entity. You don't need to do that every single time when you work with it, but that initial connection is important.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me a lot of my family's way of connecting with ancestor spirits. Oddly enough, I'm Native American, and I was always taught, you know, to be still and just to concentrate and to just pretty much empty my mind and just see what's always been there. And through doing that, you will see and experience things that you couldn't possibly have known in your lifetime. You know, it's not exactly the same, but it reminds me of it.
Intense interior work.
Yeah.
We need to take a little break right now. And
all right.
We've got a song that we're going to play. And we invite our listeners to call in. Our number is 718-664-6436. And give us a call if you've got a comment or question or...
Shakti of Oriental Raya Mark Morrigan. Raya Shakti of Oriental Raya Mark Morrigan. I raise a fucking goddess, oh, fill my soul. I raise up the spirit, oh. Raising up the
Emerald Rose with Freya Shakti.
Wow, beautiful. That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah. And this is Ariel Montserrat here with the Green Egg Radio Hour, and our guest this evening is Taylor Elwood, author and founder of the Way of the Magician Mystery School. You use a lot of artistic elements in your magic work, Taylor. How do you integrate art and magic effectively?
Well, I think that the key thing to recognize about art is that it has the potential to be a magical activity in and of itself. I mean, you pick up a paintbrush and you start to paint, and what are you doing? You're already manifesting reality just by touching that paintbrush to the palette and changing this white palette into something else. And so I found that you know, when I first started practicing magic, I'd get the athame and the sword and the rod and the pentacle and all the other assorted things, and you know, do the rituals and stuff, and hey, you know, it worked, but I didn't feel that it was necessarily, it didn't resonate with me in the same way as picking up a paintbrush did and actually doing a magical working via the act of painting and using the painting itself as a way to channel the magical work that I was doing into the world around me. And I found that to be true with writing as well. Every time I write, I am definitely in an act exploring the universe via writing and manifesting results into my life via that writing. So I found it to be very important to really connect art with magic. And I think that there's a lot out there to be said for doing that, and a lot of a way to do it that's very effective and in some ways very spontaneous. Pretty much every single painting that I've done that's in my house is either a evocation painting, a painting I've used I use for evoking a spirit, or it's a painting that's a spell. It's a spell for a specific result that I want to manifest into the world, and it's I found that to be a very effective way to express my connection to the world and at the same time use art.
Well, artwork is very powerful. It can evoke a lot of feelings, no doubt about that. Can you tell us about some of your work? Oh, I'm sorry. I am getting ahead of myself. I want to know, first of all, you're currently writing a book on wealth magic. How is your book different from others that are available out there?
Well, most books on wealth magic tend to mainly be focused on finances and on how to develop a better relationship with money. Not even always that. It's usually how to get money into your life fast because you're going through a crisis, and so it's not, I wouldn't even call it wealth magic so much as it's it's money magic, which is a different thing altogether. And I think that learning to develop a better relationship with your finances is important. I can't emphasize it enough to anybody out there, and I think that it's one of the ways that it can make life much easier for you when you have a proactive understanding of your finances and how they're manifesting in your life, and you can plan accordingly. But at the same time, when I think about wealth, I also think about my health and overall, well-being. Am I healthy? And am I in the best possible shape that I can be? And am I enjoying the quality of life that I'm living? I think about the relationships that I have with my friends and my loved ones, and if those relationships are really operating in the most optimal manner, and am I connected to the right people, or am I allowing negative people into my life? Mm-hmm. And so my approach to wealth magic is really based on a holistic approach. Additionally, I bring my background as a business coach. My day job is as a business coach. Well, it's not really a job. It's just my day business. We'll put it that way. And I bring that in as well. I find that, like, when you're, especially if you're self-employed, that your approach to finances and really just to life in general is different than when you're working for someone else. There's definitely a different kind of expectation, and you have to wear more hats So my book is also approaching it from that angle, although I do have some career magic included as well. So it's different in the sense that while it does focus on your relationship with money, and it'll help you with the book will give you some suggestions on how to find careers and all that good stuff. It's also different because it's also focused on what's involved in owning a business and how to work with a patron spirit for your business, as well as how to integrate your health and your relationships into your definition of wealth and create a wealth identity that really aligns with all the pieces of your life instead of just the financial.
Mm-hmm. So it's more about abundance than physical money.
Well, physical money is not in and of itself always an indicator of abundance. I mean, there are people that are rich but nonetheless are fairly miserable people.
Mm-hmm.
Are they wealthy? Not necessarily. Do they have lots of they do have lots of monetary resources, but I think that having a healthy relationship with money is what's important, and that doesn't mean that you necessarily need to be a millionaire or a billionaire. It means that you need to know how to manage the money that you have, and that you need to be able to plan for your future,
mm-hmm.
and have money to handle for emergencies, but also to have money for down the line. But I don't think it has to define your life. And I think a lot of times people create this polarity where they think that, you know, people either to be successful with money, you got to want to be rich, and if you don't want to be successful with money, if you want to be successful with everything else, then don't focus on money. And it's like, well, why can't you develop a relationship with money where you're not necessarily focused on becoming a millionaire or billionaire, but what you are focused on is developing an ability to live the lifestyle that you want to live. And that's really what the book is focused on. And in a sense, it's really about lifestyle design more so than money or anything else. It's really about learning how to design your life the way that you want it to be, instead of just focusing on a particular route or another.
Mhm. Mhm. Oh, well, that sounds like a wonderful approach. So can you tell us about some of your work at Emanuan Press and your philosophy as a publisher?
Yeah, definitely. I would have to say that, go into a little bit of history, I started working with Emanuan Press back in 2004. I was looking for a book or for a home for my book on pop culture magic, and none of the larger publishers wanted to touch it. It sounded a little too different for them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was probably ahead of its time at the time. Now, ironically enough, it's not really ahead of its time anymore, but, you know, that's fine. It's nice to see people who are more open to the idea. But at the time, Manny Impress was started by Storm Constantine, who's written the Raid Through series and some other fantasy and science fiction, as well as writing a couple of esoteric books. But she had, it was mainly for fantasy and science fiction. But when I came to her, I said, you know, I really want to publish this book. Would you be willing to help me? And she was willing to. And then after that, another author, Nick Farrell, approached me about publishing his book called Gathering the Magic, which was really a book about group dynamics and in magical lodges and communities, and how to recognize when there's a dysfunctional group dynamic in place and what to do about it. And again, he couldn't find a major publisher that wanted to touch that book because it wasn't necessarily going to translate into lots of bottom line sales. So I talked to Storm about it and told her about it, and she thought it was interesting. And so at that point she said, you know, this is interesting and I would love to, but if more people come, I don't know if I would really have the time or attention for handling this. And I said to her, well, you know, I'd love to step up and get involved and help with that end of things, because I find I'd like to learn more about the publishing world anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was how the nonfiction line, which is Megalithica Books, was founded. And since then, I've basically headed up the nonfiction line. And so what I'm really involved with there is I do the I kind of wear many hats there. I help with the marketing and PR to some degree. I also do layout and I do editing. In fact, I'm the managing nonfiction editor, which basically means that I decide what books we're going to accept, and then I assign editors to them. And afterwards, I'll do the layout. We're not a typical publisher in the sense that we are a small press, and it's more done by volunteers than anything else. It's a work of love. I don't get paid a salary to do what I do there. I do get paid a small royalty for books that I edit, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. I have been impressed with Mannion Press overall and Megalithica. I discovered them a couple years ago. I forget what I read, but, you know, it was like looking at the titles, and it's like, wow, there's some really good scholarly stuff there. So,
well, and to kind of explain where that kind of came from, way back in the day, I was in the midst of a PhD program. When I started getting involved with this, the PhD program didn't work out, but obviously I'm still with the Mannion Press.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my complaints about a lot of books on magic that are published by the larger publishers is that there's no attempt to be scholarly. It's just,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have books that are written, and then if you're fortunate, you have a bibliography in the back that's kind of slapped in there as an afterthought. And there's no real connection between how the authors drew on those works. So you don't really know, for example, if you're reading and you look at the bibliography and you're like, okay, well, so these are the sources that the person drew on. You don't know where in the book they actually drew on them, because they don't have any internal citations or any footnotes or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, with the Mannion Press, that was one of the things I insisted on, is that we actually have in-text citations, and I think it's one of the things that's made us stand out. It's kind of interesting, because now I've noticed that larger publishers have started in the last couple of years to, you know, have in-text citations. It's like all of a sudden they one day realize, well, maybe that's a good idea after all. And I think it's in part because of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, it's important to give credit where credit's due, and for people to know where you drew your sources from, and not just have this book written where you don't even know where they paraphrased or anything else. And so that's why we have that. And we're still continuing to publish quality books. It's a very interesting journey. I like it a lot. We are definitely small press. We don't have some of the resources that larger publishers have, but what we do have is a willingness to publish books that they won't publish. We do tend to take on unusual topics and things such as magical group dynamics and other topics. And we've also reprinted some books that kind of went out of print a while ago. Like, for example, we reprinted Estacia by Estatic Ritual by Brandi Williams,
mm-hmm.
It was a book about sex magic that she'd written years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were fortunate enough to, she was looking to republish it, and we were fortunate enough to grab her interest, and so she was willing to do that. We also do anthologies, so we had Women's Voices in Magic come out, and then we've had a couple of other anthologies as well. We had one on Shades of Faith, Minority Voices in Paganism. And again, that's something that you wouldn't really find with larger publishers, because it's topics that either are considered to not have a huge bottom line, or they're considered too controversial. And I think that as a community, for a community to grow, we need to really be willing to publish books to explore some of these issues at length and really draw awareness to these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of the pagan community as probably having more scholars than the average group of people, because we're trying to recover our own history, for one. And that was one of the things I noticed about Emmanuel Press, is that you do seem to publish books that others wouldn't, and that's really what I'm looking for, because they're going to be unusual and unique information.
Yeah. They're going to be unusual. They're going to be for intermediate to advanced practitioners, and that's the other thing too, is that for bigger publishers, there's not as much of a priority to publish books that are for advanced to intermediate, because they're looking at the bottom line and they're saying, well, what we want to publish here are the books that are going to actually sell to people who are just starting out. Well, that's great, and those people need books like that.
Yeah.
But the people who've been practicing for a long time also need books, and are also a market, maybe not as large of a market, but it's not just about the bottom line. It needs to be about what's actually going to help the community, and that's really what. And so that's what we're about. We're really a work of love, more so than profit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm perfectly fine with, because I feel like it's one of my callings while I'm in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Taylor, why do you think, I'm sorry, I didn't want to ask that. Let me put it this way. In Magical Identity, you explore space and time as separate elements. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, sure, I can. And basically, when you look at space and time, they've kind of been conflated together by physics. We talk about the space-time continuum and all this stuff, but most people, when they think about space and time, tend to think of it from the reference of physics and more or less what they know about physics and what physics says about space and time. But there's a wealth of books out there and information out there from other disciplines, such as anthropology and cultural studies, as an example, that explore space and time. And when you read those books, you see that they actually explore them as separate elements in and of themselves. And so I think it's really important to understand that space and time are separate elements, that they're not that they may relate to each other and interact, but they're not one and the same. And so in my book, what I basically chose to do was take that route and actually devote a chapter to each topic, a chapter to space, a chapter to time, and actually explore a person's relationship with each element as a separate thing in and of itself. And it was really fascinating because with space, for example, you know, I was really looking at, you know, how people arrange their spaces and what it means to create sacred space and how that and what that means for magical work. And even how people relate to space when they navigate through a room. And then when I was looking at time, I was looking at, you know, different cultural standards of time, monochronic time versus polychronic time, where monochronic time is very linear and polychronic time is very nonlinear, and how different cultures have different standards of time. And so it was just it's just fascinating material, and that's basically why I explored it in that way. And I think it really helped me understand both time and space as distinct elements in their own right that can be worked with together, but can also be worked with separately.
So, you want to talk about your future projects before we wind up here,
Wind down? Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
well, obviously I am working on the Wealth Magic book, and I actually have another book that's coming out in May, which is basically, it's actually 5 years of collected blog entries from my website put into book form, so I'm really excited about getting that out there. It'll just make it easier for people if they want to read some of those older entries instead of having to scroll back, and it'll be good to have it out. But beyond that, I am I'm doing some research on a pop culture magic 2.0 book, which will explore integration of social media into magical work, amongst other things. And I'm also going to be starting the creation of a new correspondence course. A space-time magic correspondence course, and then a couple other correspondence courses, which are going to be the first tier of the Way of Magician classes. And those are the projects that I'm working on right now. But there's always a few that are I'm working on in the back of my head too.
Mm-hmm. Planning, yeah. So. I don't know. Sylvie, do you have anything else?
Well, no, not really. I just find all this fascinating. I'm sitting here trying to just thinking on things. My mind is kind of wandering off on some of the things you said. I tend to think about things before I ask questions, you know.
That's a good practice, yeah.
It is.
That's just me. I just like to think things through, but all of this is just really fascinating. And I have added a book to my to-buy list now.
Well,
there may be
you.
A couple here. I've mm-hmm. got to go look at your list of books.
Mhm. Yeah. And so how's Emanian Press doing? Is it growing a lot?
You know, Emanian Press is doing pretty good. We certainly got a good lineup of books. We've got a few coming out later this year, which I'm really excited about putting out there. We've got an anthology from Lupa on animism that'll be coming out, and then we've got a book by Tom Swiss that's going to be exploring the kind of the relationship between Buddhism and Zen and paganism, and then we've got a book on a Kabbalistic correspondence course that's been turned into a book by another by Karen DiPolito, and we've got a couple of other works coming out later down the line. And in fact, this February we have Crystal Blanton's book, Pain and Faith in a Wiccan World, coming out. So we're really looking forward to having that out there. And it's going well. So we're just continuing to plug along and hoping to be around for many a year.
Mm-hmm. I hope you are too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, where can we find you on the internet, Taylor?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is at magicalexperiments.com, and then I also have a Twitter account at Magic Experiment, and I also have a Facebook page, which is at www.facebook.com/magical experiments. And magical experiment. Let me just check here real quick. Yeah, magical experiments with an S at the end. And so you can find me at all those places, and you can also find me online occasionally on radio shows such as this, and I always appreciate being interviewed. And then I'll be at PantheaCon in February, and I'm also going to be at the Northwest Alchemy Conference in May, and I will more than likely be doing Pagan Fair in Portland in March as well. So you'll be able to find me at those events as well, and I also teach classes at Essential Elements and PDX Harp in the local community.
Wow. How do you... You're really good at time management. How do you get all this done in one day?
Well, I don't get it all done in one day. I mean, these are a lot of this is just ongoing projects, but really it's just I'm fortunately self-employed. I do have my other business as a business coach, so that does take up a fair amount of time, but I try to reserve at least some time, in the afternoon, in the evening for my magical, the work I'm doing for the magical business and Amanian Press. And so somehow or another it works out. I also don't stress it because it'll all still be there tomorrow. It's not like it's going away.
Yeah, really?
Well, he still sounds like he's doing much better on time management than I am.
For most people I know, yeah.
I mean, most of my days I start out. I start my day, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and then from several different directions, something's thrown in there that demands attention all at once.
Yeah.
I wish I could find some magic for that.
I have another question for you, Taylor. Do you use astrology, any astrology in your magic?
I actually don't. I have yet to really sit down and learn it. It might be something that happens one day, but it's kind of one of those things where also, I'm working on my own stuff so much that I rarely have the time to really go through everything else that everyone else is putting out there. I usually have about 6 or 7 books that I'm reading at a given time, and progress on any of those books is slow. I usually have to make plans that I'm going to spend an hour or two in the evening just reading, and I try and do that once or twice a week, and then otherwise just catch snippets here and there of reading, and that's not even including the 5 or 6 books I'm also reading with my wife as just part of ongoing conversations that we're having around those books. So I'm doing lots of reading, just not getting it done very fast.
Yeah.
How do you keep all that straight, reading 5 or 6 different... How do you keep that straight? Wow.
Well, it's on different topics. It's on different topics, for one thing, so that helps. So I'm reading, a couple books on business right now. I'm reading a book on Soma Aesthetics, which is the study of the aesthetics of the body. And then I'm reading... a couple fantasy books. I'm reading a couple magic books and something else here, or a book on dialogue and communication theory, and that helps. Just having different topics to focus on. But it's also just I have a very active mind, and I don't think I could do it any other way. I just trying to read one book doesn't work for me anymore, and hasn't for a long time.
Yeah, me either. I've got probably 6 books going at any given time. It's like the next to the bed, nobody can get through there, It's just a massive pile of books. So, but anyway, that's our show for tonight, and unfortunately we're going to have to wrap it up. Next week, stay with us, or tune in when we have Dorothy Morrison. And Sylvie, you want to tell our listeners about Dorothy?
Yes, Dorothy is the original Wicked Witch, so tune in with us next week because you're not going to want to miss what this woman has to tell you.
Mm-hmm. And she wrote a book called Wicked.
Utterly Wicked.
Utterly Wicked, yeah. So, Taylor, thanks for being with us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a wonderful evening.
And thanks for being on our show. And that's our show for tonight, folks. Good night, Tom and Aubrey.
Good night, everyone.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com.